year, at least one in four Americans is diagnosed with a heart condition. At that point, there are some very important decisions to make for your future. The harsh reality may be you are left with more questions than answers. This is where the Heart Rhythm Center podcast can help. We are your what, why, and how of palpitations, heart rhythm disorders, pacemakers, and defibrillators. Welcome your host, Dr. Jeffrey L. Williams, board certified in internal medicine, cardiovascular disease, and clinical cardiac electrophysiology. The information included in this podcast is for educational purposes only. It is not intended or implied to be professional medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice. Listeners should always consult their healthcare providers to determine the appropriateness of the information for their own situation, or if they have any questions regarding medical conditions or treatment plans.
This is Dr. Williams, and this is What Are Palpitations? Podcast 10, Possible Complications of Electrophysiology Studies and Ablations. This podcast, though intended for patients and primary care providers, is a bit more complex than the other podcasts due to the nature of the topic. In most cases, I have attempted to boil the complication rates down to simple percentages. This section will familiarize patients with the names of common complications and how we detect and treat them. Major and minor complications have been defined based on prior reports of complications related to anesthesia and electrophysiology procedures. Major complications include death, cardiac arrest, atrioventricular block requiring a pacemaker, cardiac perforation, cardiac valve injury, coronary venous dissection, hemothorax, pneumothorax, transient ischemic attack, stroke, myocardial infarction, pericardial tamponade, severe respiratory failure, and acute respiratory distress syndrome. Minor complications include intraprocedural drug reaction, peripheral embolus, phlebitis, peripheral nerve injury, atelectasis, pulmonary edema, fever, and pleural effusion. Prior reports indicate a 2 to 7% rate of major and minor complications during EP studies with ablation using traditional sedation and ventilation methods. Many of these complications are minor, such as atelectasis, fever, vascular congestion, and pericarditis, and generally do not prolong hospitalization. Closer examination of the results in my experience reveals that minor complications, such as atelectasis, fever, and vascular congestion, may simply be reflective of common pulmonary complications seen after general anesthesia. Atelectasis, or peripheral lung collapse, can be seen on computed tomography or CT scan in up to 90% of patients who are anesthetized, and postoperative pulmonary complications have been found to occur in 9 to 10% of patients. Furthermore, 40% of the minor complications in a prior study of mine were related to atelectasis. Atelectasis is a minor collapse of the small airways in the lungs that is treated by deep breathing, which is called incentive spirometry in the hospital. It is important to note that no patient experienced procedural awareness during the procedure. Awareness with recall after surgery in the United States is infrequent, occurring 0.1 to 1%, but may be associated with post-traumatic stress disorder in nearly 50% of patients who experience procedural awareness. Finally, ablations for atrial fibrillation are considered higher risk than those for most other arrhythmias, excluding ventricular tachycardia. I estimate anywhere from a 3% to as high as an 8% rate of major complications for patients undergoing atrial fibrillation ablations. This is based on the overall worldwide rate of complications for thousands of patients who underwent ablations for atrial fibrillation at centers around the world. It must be noted that the major complication rates of atrial fibrillation and ventricular tachycardia ablation could be as high as 10%. Studies have found that clinicians often underestimate the rate of complications and overestimate the success rate of most medical interventions. It is important to talk to your care providers about the risks and benefits of any procedure that is being considered. There is obviously a difference in complication rates based on the operating physician and the hospital in which the physician practices. I examined the complication rates of the first consecutive 72 EP studies with ablations performed when I started a new EP program at a community hospital. I did not have any major complications in this series of patients. However, I have had major complications in EP studies and ablations. It is important to note that past success rates do not guarantee future performance. All procedures have a risk of complications. See Podcast 5 for the questions to ask your doctor before having surgery. Complications that can occur during or after EP studies. I will discuss the most common complications that can occur during or after EP studies. Sedation or airway issues. Less than 20% of EP programs in the United States exclusively use anesthesia professionals for procedural sedation. Minor complications, atelectasis or minor lung compression, fever or vascular congestion, may simply be reflective of the common postoperative pulmonary complications seen after general anesthesia. Atelectasis can be seen on CT scan in up to 90% of patients who are anesthetized, and postoperative pulmonary complications have been found to occur in 9 to 10% of patients. There are data to suggest that patients undergoing invasive EP procedures may require deep, conscious sedation that is often converted to general anesthesia. Thus, the use of general anesthesia, including high-frequency ventilation to minimize patient movement during EP procedures, may enhance patient safety. Electrical heart block. Heart block may be caused when ablation is performed near the AV node in a patient during the EP study. This has been found to occur in as many as 5 out of every 100 patients. However, my experience has been that fewer than 1 in 100 patients will experience permanent heart block requiring pacemaker implantation. Vascular access and bleeding. Vascular access can be a significant cause of periprocedural complications and may occur in up to 1 to 2% of patients after EP studies. A hematoma is a collection of blood outside the blood vessel but underneath the skin. The development of postoperative hematoma places the patient at elevated risk of infection, especially if a device is implanted at the site. Most hematomas resolve with watchful waiting and do not require a surgical repair. They resolve over 4 to 6 weeks and can often have significant associated bruising, which also resolves over that time period. Worrisome signs include continued swelling, redness, warmth, bleeding, oozing, or changes in the incision. It is important to call your physician with any worries about incision or pocket healing. Another type of vascular complication is a pseudoaneurysm. This forms as a result of a leaking hole in a blood vessel that allows blood to accumulate in surrounding tissue. Persistent communication between the blood vessel and the resultant cavity in the surrounding tissue can cause swelling and pain. This can often be treated by a radiologist placing pressure on the region using ultrasound guidance or injecting a medication called thrombin into the site to stop the bleeding, although surgery may be required in some circumstances. Finally, an arteriovenous fistula is a vascular complication in which an artery and vein develop an abnormal connection. Arteriovenous fistulas can be treated with ultrasound-guided compression, but may require surgical repair. Either of these complications can cause swelling and pain at the site, and both are usually diagnosed by using ultrasound to look for abnormal blood collections or flow. There are data to suggest that temporarily interrupting anticoagulation, such as stopping warfarin therapy, is associated with increased thromboembolic events, such as strokes or transient ischemic attacks called TIAs, whereas cessation of warfarin with bridging anticoagulation with heparin products is associated with a higher rate of hematomas and a longer hospital stay. The issue of perioperative anticoagulation is very important to discuss with the doctor who will be performing your EP study. I routinely perform EP studies while continuing warfarin uninterrupted. Patients who take target-specific oral anticoagulants, such as Xarelto, Eliquis, or Pradaxa, need to talk with their doctor about whether or not these agents should be taken prior to the procedure. I generally have patients hold these medications for 1 to 2 days prior to the procedure and restart them 1 to 3 days after the procedure. No matter which vascular access technique is used, generally, the more experience a doctor has, the lower the complication rate. Perforation and tamponade. Perforation occurs when trauma causes an unintended hole in a blood vessel or the walls of the heart. It can be a life-threatening situation. Perforation, both acute and subacute, has been reported to occur in up to 1% of EP studies and ablations. Symptoms of perforation include pleuritic, chest pain from pericarditis, and in the presence of pericardial effusion, which is blood collecting around the outside of the heart, the possible development of shortness of breath and hypotension as tamponade develops. Pleuritic chest pain means the pain gets worse when somebody lays down or takes a deep breath. Tamponade occurs when enough blood collects on the outside of the heart that it can compress the heart and render it unable to pump blood effectively. Other signs and symptoms of perforation include electrocardiogram abnormalities and friction rub, which sounds like rubbing sandpaper heard on stethoscope, and it can occur after a procedure. If perforation is suspected, urgent evaluation of the patient is warranted. Often, the first step is to check an echocardiogram of the heart to see if there's any blood collecting around the outside of the heart, called a pericardial effusion. Cardiac surgery is typically not required for the majority of patients diagnosed with cardiac perforation caused during an EP study and ablation. Rather, most cases can be managed with pericardiocentesis or drainage of blood with a small catheter performed by an interventional cardiologist for symptomatic pericardial effusions in the EP laboratory with close cardiothoracic surgical collaboration. Please go to my blog at heart-rhythm-center.com to see an example of a large cardiac silhouette on chest x-ray developing after a procedure that was due to a large pericardial effusion. This effusion was treated with pericardiocentesis with no evidence of blood reaccumulation. Although perforation and subsequent tamponade are infrequent complications of EP studies, they can be responsible for significant patient morbidity, which is another word for any untoward side effect from a procedure, and mortality, which is also known as death. The risks of perforation cannot be underestimated. Death from tamponade with subsequent cardiac arrest was responsible for 22% of the deaths in a worldwide study of perforation after ablation for atrial fibrillation. Heart attacks. Heart attacks are also called myocardial infarctions, or MIs, and are the most common cause of death after any surgery. They generally occur in less than 1% of EP studies. Again, the physician performing the EP study generally assesses the risk of surgery prior to the procedure, and patients at high risk of heart attacks may need additional heart care prior to proceeding with the EP study. Keep in mind that those patients who have advanced coronary artery disease causing heart failure with arrhythmias can be at the highest risk for perioperative heart attacks. Death. In-hospital death is very rare in patients undergoing EP studies and ablations, except in the case of atrial fibrillation and ventricular tachycardia ablations. The death rate for atrial fibrillation ablations has been estimated at 0.2%, which is 2 in 1,000 patients. The death rate for ventricular tachycardia ablations has been estimated at 1 to 2%, which is 1 to 2 out of 100 patients. A recent study reported a 5% rate of death within 1 month of ventricular tachycardia ablations, with more than half of the deaths occurring while the patients were still hospitalized. The most common cause of in-hospital death is myocardial infarction or heart attack. Less common causes include pulmonary embolism, stroke, heart failure, and sepsis. Length of hospital stay. Most patients who undergo EP studies and ablation will go home the next day. Many patients who undergo EP studies and ablations for atrial fibrillation or ventricular tachycardia will stay more than 1 night in the hospital. I have found that older patients may have longer lengths of stay in the hospital. Patients who undergo EP studies and ablations but were hospitalized for other reasons, for instance, they were not electively admitted to the hospital for their EP study, tend to have longer lengths of stay in the hospital. Hospital readmissions. Many patients undergoing EP studies have heart failure, and these patients have higher readmission rates than patients without heart failure. Furthermore, patients who undergo EP studies and ablations but were hospitalized for other reasons, for instance, they were not electively admitted to the hospital for their EP study, rather they were emergently admitted through the emergency room, tend to have longer lengths of stay in the hospital and higher rates of hospital readmission. There are many factors that can increase the likelihood of readmission to the hospital after an EP study. Increased age and increased ablation complexity. For example, ablations that only involve the right side of the heart are less complex than ablations that require transseptal punctures to gain access to the left side of the heart may increase readmission rate. Other factors that can increase risk of readmission include abnormal kidney function, emergency situation or presentation, ejection fraction, female gender, and small stature for those patients that weigh less than 100 pounds. Reasons for readmission are quite varied, but many result from the aforementioned complications in addition to heart failure, pneumonia, or strokes. Many patients who require EP studies are greater than 65 years of age and often have other medical conditions that may be exacerbated by any surgical procedure. Strokes. Strokes are also called transient ischemic attacks, or TIAs, and they may occur immediately postoperatively or can occur several weeks after the procedure. Strokes generally occur in less than 1% of patients, but can occur more frequently in patients undergoing ablations for atrial fibrillation. I have most commonly seen strokes in patients who have had anticoagulation, such as warfarin or Coumadin, held temporarily for surgery. The strokes occur during the time the anticoagulation was held until the patient has been effectively re-anticoagulated after the surgery. There are data to suggest that EP procedures can be safely performed without stopping warfarin, which may lead to fewer complications. It is important to discuss management of anticoagulation with the physician prior to surgery. Special EP studies in ablations that may have higher rates of complications and lower success rates. Ablations for atrial fibrillation are viewed as higher-risk ablations for several reasons. First, ablations for atrial fibrillation involve accessing the left atrium of the heart and require one or more transseptal punctures. These punctures are technically demanding and may result in inadvertent damage to your heart and vascular system. Furthermore, most patients are given strong blood thinners before, during, and after the ablation, thus exacerbating any procedural risks. Second, atrial fibrillation ablations can require tens or hundreds of ablation lesions. There is risk any time a burn or an ablation is performed or delivered to your heart. Finally, the success rate for atrial fibrillation ablation ranges from 60 to 80% for a single procedure, and over 50% of patients may require more than one procedure to control symptoms from atrial fibrillation. Of patients undergoing an ablation for atrial fibrillation, approximately 15% of patients may require a repeat ablation within 1 year of the initial procedure, and approximately 30% of these patients will require a repeat ablation within 3 years of the initial procedure. The death rate for atrial fibrillation ablations has been estimated at 0.2%. Ablations for ventricular tachycardia, VT, are also viewed as higher-risk ablations. As with atrial fibrillation ablations, VT ablations often require transseptal punctures to gain access to the left ventricle, which is a common site of origin for VT. Patients undergoing these ablations may also be on anticoagulation and need large numbers of ablations or burns. More importantly, the vast majority of patients with VT also have underlying severe coronary artery blockages as well as heart failure. These patients are at higher risk of procedural heart attacks and death. Most patients who have VT from coronary artery blockages will have several different types of VT, with each requiring its own special type of ablation, usually completed during the same procedure. It is estimated that 60% of patients who undergo ablations for VT will have recurrent VT within 6 months of the EP study. The death rate for ventricular tachycardia ablations has been estimated at 1 to 2%, and a recent study reported as high as a 5% rate of death within 1 month of VT ablations, with more than half of the deaths occurring while the patients were still hospitalized. Thanks for listening to Podcast 10, The Possible Complications of Electrophysiology Studies and Ablations, and I hope you'll join me for Podcast 11, Postoperative Care After the EP Study and Possible Ablation.
Thank you for listening to the Heart Rhythm Center. If you have enjoyed this episode and would like to access extensive explanations of topics discussed today, together with helpful illustrations, head over to www.heart-rhythm-center.com, where a full list of available publications on Amazon can be easily accessed. That's www.heart-rhythm-center.com. And please subscribe to the Heart Rhythm Center blog, as well as Dr. Williams' author page on Amazon, where his books discussing arrhythmias, pacemakers, and defibrillators are available in print and electronic Kindle versions.